Greetings. Greetings once again. Yes, 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 indeed. It is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, nor do we. Well, actually, we do. There's not a third thing that we don't do. There's only the two. And then after that, we do things. And so I want to start with the reason I introduce it that way is because I'm getting older. And as I get older, I realize that I'm losing the ability to effectively interact with reality, which is something I had never anticipated would happen. When I was young, I thought I would get old, but that I would still be functional. I didn't realize the impact and the dramatic diminishing of functionality in reality. And it is disturbing. I think that's why grumpy old men get so grumpy. Have I already told this story? If I've already told this story, bear with me. I'm slipping into dementia slowly, a little bit at a time. Thanks for tuning in this week. I want to open, what should I open with? Should I open with the California Screaming file? Or Luigi Mangione, or the baby killer lady whose name I've already forgotten? I was going to ask my extremely attractive audio engineer before we got on the air, do you remember the name of the lady who killed her baby, who all the pro-aborts are raising money for her now? I can't remember her name.
Lindsay.
Lindsay something or other. Yeah, should I start with that? I should probably remember her name or at least put it in the metadata. So that I can get the algorithms to, you want to maximize visibility, you know. All right. Anyway, maybe I'll start with, well, let's start in Texas, because down in Texas, if you've been paying attention to the right-wing alternative media, you know that there is an active campaign to conquer Texas by the Islamists. That's right. Now that they've already conquered Michigan, they go for the next state that has kind of a cool shape because, I don't know, the Islamists, they like states that have interesting shapes, maybe. I don't know. Why did they start with Michigan? Is it because it looks like a catcher's mitt? I don't know. Now they're going to Texas, which has, no doubt, Texas is the most cool-shaped state of all states, maybe in the history of the earth. And the Islamists are on the march in the state of Texas, building mosques and super mosques and Islamic compounds left and right. And so the Dallas Express reported this past week that, well, happening right now, over this weekend, is a Texas pastors summit that's been organized to stop the Muslim Brotherhood in Texas. That's right. Don't mess with Texas, Abdul. No, they're not going to say that, because these are nice pastors, mostly Baptists. The Pine Baptist Church, in fact, in Pittsburgh, Texas. Why? Because Texas has a name of every town you ever heard of, except it's in Texas. Like Pittsburgh, huh? Paris. That's right. The Pittsburgh Pine Baptist Church is going to host this event. In fact, I don't know what the date is today. Is today the... Oh, this event happened yesterday. The event already occurred. And just to let you know, it opened with... this is to stop the Muslim Brotherhood. The meeting opened with coffee and a meet and greet at 9. Then there was Q&A and discussions up until 11:15 with lunch at noon. This is the pastors coming together to stop the Muslim Brotherhood. It's called the No Retreat, No Surrender, and the event concluded at 4. Oh, but there was a session. There was a session billed as ASIG 2, intelligence training for Baptists and other denominational pastors there in the great state of Texas. That went from 1 to 4, as far as we know. Allied Special Intelligence Group led the main session. They have experience in special operations, law enforcement, political warfare, counterintelligence, and human intelligence. They train citizens, churches, political groups, public officials, and law enforcement. That's the statement from their... What do they train them in? Well, apparently, special operations, law enforcement, political warfare, counterintelligence, human intelligence. And so someone needs to send a memo to the Baptist ministers there in Texas, not just the Baptists, but the Methodists, because you know there's way more Methodists down there in Texas than Baptists. And by the way, down in Texas, the Methodists aren't queer yet, most of them. They're not even queer, let alone tranny, down in Texas. The Methodists, most of them are still fairly conservative down there. And the Baptists, too, fairly conservative. But someone needs to get a memo to these pastors that what they really need is not training in law enforcement, political warfare, counterintelligence. These guys need to learn how to preach the gospel, because there's only one thing that's going to stop the Muslims from taking over America, and that is the gospel of Jesus Christ. There's nothing else. They're having kids faster than us. Eventually, they're going to outnumber us 10 to 1. So there's no way we're going to beat them in a shooting war. They're immigrating and reproducing, which means they will win eventually. And so only the gospel can save us. And what is emblematic of where we are in the history of America is that the pastor, the most conservative pastors in the most conservative state, are hiring, training in intelligence and counterintelligence and political warfare, when they should understand that they just need to be preaching the gospel. But most of them don't know the gospel. Most of them are involved in a religious industry. Christianity in America is primarily a religious industry. And what does industry do? Industry focus on the product, preservation of the marketplace. We have consultants come in and give us special training. And so these pastors in Texas don't understand that the main point is not to save America from the Muslims. The main point is to save the Muslims from the devil. If you save enough Muslims from the devil, you won't have to worry about Texas. You won't have to worry about Islamic fanatics coming and disrupting the parking ministry at your megachurch, if you would just preach the gospel. But the gospel is hard to come by, especially in the Christian industry. No retreat, no surrender. Did I mention that was the name of the event, with lunch at noon and concluded at 4? No retreat, no surrender. Closing her down at 4, though, just so you know, because we want to be home in time for supper. Anyway, okay, so where should I go from here? I think I want to tell you about my coffee cup injury. Not a coffee cup industry, although there is one of those, and I'm okay with that. I got nothing against coffee cups. In fact, we have more coffee cups in my house right now than I think the last 3 generations of my family had all together, if you counted them all, probably. But me, I'm old school. I generally use 1 coffee cup. And why is that? I'm not sure why. I think because I grew up poor, I only had 1 coffee cup. Each person in the house had 1 coffee cup. You know, it was like the bathroom. There's only 1. So I use 1 coffee cup out of just a habit, I suppose. And so over the past, I don't know how many years, I've used the same coffee cup for so long that it appears that the mere swirling around of the coffee in the cup happened for so long that there was enough erosion that the coffee actually, the cup started to leak. The coffee would actually go through the ceramic and drip out of the cup. That's how much I used it and how long I used that same cup. It's as if it had sat in the desert for a million years and it just eroded slowly away. And so that coffee cup had to go. Had to get a new coffee cup. Now, did I go and buy a new coffee cup? I did not. Because as I said, we have more coffee cups in our house right now than the last five generations of both of our families ever accumulated. And so I adopted an existing coffee cup that was already in the house.
So I can buy more.
That's right. Because now that I've adopted that cup, the ladies of the house will have to go find another one to replace that one. Because that, oh, Dad's using that one now. So I start using this coffee cup, I don't know, a couple of months ago, maybe 3 months ago, maybe 4 years ago. I can't remember anymore. I'm getting older. I called a guy on the phone by accident the other day. The reason I called him by accident was because I was trying to call his dad, but I couldn't read my phone because my eyes don't work that well anymore. And I misread his name for his dad's name, and I dialed him. And I said, wow, hey, how's it going? I was actually trying to call your dad, but hey, you know, let's catch up. How are you? And so that's right. That I dialed him by mistake. I dialed him. Well, yeah, that's just that alone. All right, so, and now that I've gotten into that story from the coffee cup story, I can't remember the point of that story. If you want to know how dilapidated and non-functional you're going to become if you live long enough, I can't remember why I started telling you I dialed this guy by mistake. So let's return to the coffee cup story, and then maybe the rest of the dialing the guy by mistake story will come to me, maybe not. So with the coffee cup, I'm using the coffee cup for, I don't know, three. Oh, there you go. So I told the guy who I dialed by mistake, I told him, oh, wow, it's been a couple of years since we talked. He said, actually, it's been about 7 years. I said, no way, 7 years? He said, yeah, it's been, well, almost 7 years, which I thought was maybe a year or so. And so how long have I been using this coffee cup? I don't know. It's been a while. Well, I'll tell you what. It's been long enough now that I realize that the shape of the handle of this coffee cup is different than the shape of the handle of the coffee cup that I've used for 15 or 20 years, however long I've been using that cup. And the shape of this coffee cup handle has inflicted an injury on the ring finger of my left hand to where I can no longer hold the coffee cup like I've held it for my entire life. I've held a coffee cup a certain way for my entire life, and just in the last month or so, I've developed an acute sharp pain at a specific point in the middle joint of my left ring finger that prevents me from holding the coffee cup the way I've held it my whole life. And so I'm not sure what to do. Do I change? The thing is, it's hard to change the way you pick up and hold a coffee cup because it's kind of ingrained into you. And so I reach and I pick it up and I'm like, ow. Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. Like a 12-year-old girl. Ow.
That mug is heavy.
Yeah, and I drink a fairly large cup of coffee. So, I mean, there's a good, I don't know, 16, 18 ounces of coffee. But still, the middle joint of my left ring finger should be able to withstand 18 ounces of pressure, even acute pressure on a concentrated point, but it no longer can. So do I change coffee cups? Do I try to adjust my cup handling technique? It's a big question. It's a big question in the life of a person who is in real time experiencing forget the decline and fall of Western civilization. I'm most concerned with the decline and fall of Doug McBurney. Okay, that's it. I was waiting. I was waiting for it the whole time because I knew at some point he was going to say amnesia. And for some reason, I thought it came sooner. But that's because we got dementia, amnesia, whatever. And by the way, when I say the decline and fall, obviously I'm only talking about my body, which I would like to point out to everyone out there. No matter how good you feel at this point, at some point in the not too distant future, you're going to fall down and you will not be able to get up. One of the weakest forces in the universe, gravity, is going to actually prevent you from getting up. So think about that, especially if you're young and strong and vivacious. It's a short trip. All right. So I hope, all right, so did I get to the end of the coffee cup story? Yeah, there really is no end to the story because it's not over yet. So I just let you know. And then if any of you have any advice, I'm happy to accept any advice. If anybody's selling coffee cups,
No. Let
me know.
No more.
No more coffee cups. All right. By the way, no, we prefer to go shopping for coffee cups.
No, we have too many.
I know. I think I've made that perfectly clear. All right. So, California screaming file. We have to go out there because this didn't even happen in California. What happened in Minnesota, if you remember, was the naked exposure of some of the grossest fraud and government corruption in the history of the world has been going on in Minnesota for my entire adult life, ever since we started importing Somalians under George H.W. Bush at least 30, 35 years ago. It's been going on. And there's this independent reporter named Nick Shirley who was part of uncovering the gross, obvious, very easy to understand government fraud and waste and abuse and corruption and political payoffs and everything going on in Minnesota through the Somali daycare centers and the Learing centers and all of that. And so as that was going on, politicians in California took notice and started constructing laws that would protect them from people like independent reporter Nick Shirley. In fact, the legislation that was eventually put together by Assemblywoman Mia Bonta is known colloquially on the right as the Stop Nick Shirley Act. That's right. Now, California calls it part of its Safe at Home confidentiality program that's been constructed and enforced over the last several years to, they say, safeguard immigration support service providers. Now, why do immigration support service providers need protection? Well, before we get to that, we need to what is an immigration support service provider? That alone, I'm a bit confused as to what that even is, and then why would they need protection? And we're not trying to protect them from disease or injury. It's not about workplace safety. This is to protect immigration support service providers from harassment. So why is it we have these, and why do we need to protect them from harassment, and what is this all about? And then when you get into the story from the California Screaming File, you realize that the legislation was constructed primarily by Assemblywoman Mia Bonta, and then you realize that Mia Bonta is married to Rob Bonta, who is the attorney general out there in California. And the Safe at Home Confidentiality Program Update 2026, also known as AB 2624, has now been signed into law by the governor, Gavin Newsom, who is the nephew of Nancy Pelosi, who is a child of the devil. Just to put it all together for you. Nancy Pelosi, forget about the Italian mafia links and all that goes back. Forget about that. Nancy's pedigree goes way, way, way back. Way back. All right. And so they've basically put into law now in the state of California. Basically, anyone who takes photos or videos of workers at migration-related nonprofit organizations face up to a $10,000 fine per violation, imprisonment, and charges, criminal charges. So, basically, the crime family out in California saw what Nick Shirley was doing in Minnesota, realize that they have an operation running in California that dwarfs Minnesota. Minnesota's not a pimple on the backside of California as far as the amount of fraud, the amount of money being stolen and shoveled into the pockets of members of the crime family and people who've done the crime family favors and people to whom the crime family owes favors. Just the amount of money being stolen is so extraordinary that if it were to come out, that there could be significant repercussions for the crime family members there in the state of California. So they immediately constructed a law so that if anybody does what Nick Shirley did, they can arrest them, put them in jail. And that's now been signed into law by Nancy Pelosi's nephew. Great step half-nephew of Satan. Great step half-nephew of Satan. Something like that. All right. So anyway, what are the penalties? Again, I said, so if you take video at a Learing Center in Los Angeles as opposed to Minneapolis... if you were to find a Learing Center out there, and we're not saying there are any. I mean, there's daycare centers in the state of California, and there are public health charities that are helping foreign-born immigrants, recent immigrants, through problems like ADHD and speech therapy and a number of different, and of course there are elder care and aging health care facilities that are nonprofits that are certainly not associated with the government or the Pelosi or Newsom families in any way, especially no financial way. There's a lot of that going on, but it's all clean and pure as the driven snow, driven purely by the love of the Pelosis and the Newsoms for their fellow man, especially if that fellow man recently immigrated to America. and may or may not, may vote Democrat. Okay, so what are the fines again? $10,000 per violation. So what that means is every time Nick Shirley turned his camera on and turned it off and cut in between, that's $10,000 fine. So, and then they can charge a guy like Nick Shirley, say, or another guy who's taking the video, exposing the rampant fraud, $10,000 per cut, sonny boy. Are you ready to hang it out there for that? Maybe you take your skateboard home at that point, Jimmy, and you stop shooting video at the Learing Center in California. Stop leering at our Learing Center with your camera. Other criminal charges could be brought. Forced content takedown orders are also a part of this. Gives the state of California the ability to send a content takedown order to YouTube and TikTok and whatever it is that replaces YouTube and TikTok, wherever the media goes. California now has on the books a means by which they can intimidate Yahoo? No, not Yahoo. Nobody goes on Yahoo anymore, do they? YouTube is what I meant to say. They can now intimidate YouTube. They can intimidate the good folks at TikTok and whoever else is promoting the social media. The fine people at Facebook. By saying, hey, we have an order for you to take down the content of that punk on his skateboard who was leering at our Learing Center. Leering at all the money that we were shoveling into the trucks, driving it out the back, taking it to the political headquarters and dumping it into the large bags and distributing the money. He was taking video the whole time, and you got to take that down. And then they're all intimidated. They take it down because, after all, it's part of the program, AB 2624, the Safe at Home Act. It's designed to keep the Pelosi's and the Newsom safe at home, because, you know, if it were to found out, if the world were to find out what was going on, the Pelosi's and the Newsom's would be removed from their homes because they'd be on their way to prison. So the Safe at Home Act, obviously. All right. So forced content takedown, $10,000 per shot, imprisonment, criminal charges, and summary execution. What? Oh, no. Well, that part I made up. That's not a part of the existing California Safe at Home Act. That was not part of the 2026 update that was rushed into, voted on in the dark, signed by Newsom in the middle of the night last night. That's the summary execution part. Now, not that that wasn't part of the debate and in some of the early drafts of the, you know, no. The summary execution comes later. Right now, it's just the take the stuff off of YouTube and charge him with a misdemeanor, throw him in jail for a few hours. Because most people will be frightened off with just that. Most people. And the summary execution, that would be, that wouldn't need to be introduced until someone grew some new testicles in California, and actually, but the odds of that happening are pretty slim. All right, and then, so let's see. So we go from California to Anthony Fauci, which we don't know where Anthony Fauci lives. We think it's somewhere near the center of the earth, just off a pit somewhere. Not sure where he's, but maybe in the D.C. metro area. Anthony Fauci's lawyers have launched a legal defense fund. Now, I don't know if they've got this on a GoFundMe or GiveSendGo. I'm not sure how they're doing this. I think they're doing it the old-fashioned way, where they set up a trust, and then they start sending out letters under the letterhead of the law firm to very rich people who've donated lots of money to Democrats and other communist insurgents and insurrectionists. And they're going to raise a small fortune because, well, why not? I mean, it can be done. It's been done. And it's, for crying out loud, the money's pouring in for Luigi Mangione and the baby killer, Lindsay, what's her name there, who choked her three children to death and then raised $1 million. Some people raised $1 million for her. So Fauci's people are sitting around going, well, what are we waiting for crying out loud? I mean, Anthony Fauci's got better name recognition than any of these people. We could raise $1 billion on Fauci. And then whatever happens to Fauci, well, that's beside the point. The defense fund, there's the money. It's sitting there. We'll figure out what to do with it. Come on. So they've launched it, and no doubt it will be a smashing, huge, massive financial success for someone. And maybe Anthony Fauci or maybe his family. I don't know. I don't accuse Anthony and Fauci of being involved in any of that at all, except through the pure intention that Anthony Fauci has to defend himself against these outrageous false charges that he did anything untoward at any time to anyone at all, ever. It's the Weekly Worldview. That's right. I know. People who are not familiar with Stevie Vai and guitar in the 1980s, they have no idea what was going on right there. But that was quite possibly the high point of rock and roll, was that record. Quite possibly. I'm not going to insist. I'm going to say it was not Satisfaction with the Rolling Stones. That's all. We can leave it at that. Yeah. That could be the high point of rock and roll. I mean, in the big picture, the long arc of history, if there was, just if you were measuring things on a pure level of that was enjoyable, then that would be the, but that's probably not how things would be looked at. So I like that record. Yeah. Well, the thing was, I ended up in a tent for about, I don't know, 2 months, 3 months. When I was younger, I ended up in a tent out in the dirt and mud. Well, no, I was in a tent. I mean, come on. I wasn't actually in the dirt and mud. That was for other guys. But I was in a tent, and that was the only record I had. It's back when we had cassettes and a Walkman. And that's what I listened to. That and there was another, Graceland by Paul Simon. So imagine being trapped in a tent with nothing but Paul Simon's Graceland and David Lee Roth's Eat 'Em and Smile for approximately 3 months. That was my life. So, I know. All that means is, yeah, you've had it pretty good, kiddo. You know, what do you got to worry about? That's the worst it ever got. Anyway, that's all beside the point of what I was just talking about with the corruption out in California. Forget that. With Fauci's lawyers. Able with a straight face and without being arrested, they announce a legal defense fund. They should be arrested for conspiring to put together such a fund. But you know why that's not happening is because of, well, the entire construct of the election and fundraising political laws in America are designed to enrich extremely ambitious liars. Case in point, Anthony Vindman. Anthony, I apologize. I got him confused with Anthony Fauci. Alexander Vindman, the Ukrainian spy, plant, whatever he is, Ukrainian operative spy, former director of European affairs at the National Security Council under Barack Obama. He ran for election. Why? Because you can raise a fortune and keep it. That's why. And he lost. In fact, where is the story here? Vindman, and now he's giving away, listen to this, he's going to give away the millions and millions of dollars left over from his campaign. So he puts up on social media somewhere this past week. He's going to continue, even though he lost the election. He's such a good person that he's going to continue to fight for what is right and good in his home state of Florida. He's going to contribute money in the governor's race to the to the Democrat in the House races. He's gonna donate. He raised about $16 million. It's unclear exactly how much he has left because the laws are designed so that it doesn't have to be 100% clear. And he's going to give away, he's already made a $400,000 contribution to the Florida Democrat Party. Why? Because he loves them and he cares about doing what's right. So it was $16 million. I don't know how much he spent on his campaign. His opponent, by the way, was a full-throated communist. She raised less than $1 million and she beat him. He's a Democrat establishment guy with more name recognition. Well, I don't know about the name recognition. Her name is Angie Nixon. She's a full-throated communist. She's one of these communist DSA types that you've been hearing about. She raises and spends less than $1 million and beats the establishment Democrat. How does that happen? It makes me sense that Vindman's campaign was never real at all. It was all just to raise approximately $16 million so that that money could then be dispersed among Vindman's family and friends and political donors. And sure, of course, he's going to kick some back to the Democrat Party. I mean, they made it all happen. They made it all look real. They gave it all the veneer of legitimacy for the Ukrainian operative spy, former director of Barack Obama's corrupt insurrectionist National Security Council. Anyway, so the fact that Vindman gets to keep the however many millions he's got left, and it must be millions if he kicked back only $400K. I mean, if he was able to kick back $400,000 to the Democrats, you got to figure he's got $4 or $10 million left. That's not counting the money that he raised that he didn't tell anybody about. And that's not counting the political favors and arrangements that were made that are worth, I mean, come on, priceless in the Democrat, the way of the world. Okay. So Vindman, I got to that. I got to the Nick Shirley Act, right? Fauci. Okay, and we talked about the Texas pastors, the Baptists and the Methodists who have lost Texas, right? Texas was probably the last stand of the Christian industry against the Muslim industry. So we got to that, but now let's go to John Hagee. Are you familiar with John Hagee? He asked, he's extremely attractive audio engineer. John Hagee? You've heard the name. He's a TV preacher. He has spent his career primarily raising and spending other people's money around tours to Israel. That's how I know John Hagee. I know him from a TV network that I used to be affiliated with only in an ancillary way. I never had a contract with them, thankfully. But I worked for people who maybe had some affiliation with the television networks that promote the Christianity industry. And I'm embarrassed to say that I worked with them, frankly. I'm embarrassed to say that I helped to contribute content to the same network that would carry John Hagee. That's embarrassing for me to admit now, but I did it. I was young, stupid. Anyway, there's a video circulating now, John Hagee defending Israel. And in it, he says, Jesus is coming back as a Jewish rabbi. He actually uses those words. John Hagee, probably one of the most famous end times preachers that's ever preached about the end times. John Hagee basically made his career hyperventilating about the end times. So you would think that John Hagee would be very familiar with the book of Revelation and the end times and Daniel and Haggai and Zephaniah and Isaiah and Daniel, the whole thing, right? If there's one guy who knows it back to front, upside down and backwards, inside out and the other way is John Hagee. Why? Well, come on. That's how he made, I don't know how many tens of millions of dollars John Hagee has banked on the end times, but you'd think he knows it pretty well. But I saw the video myself. I heard it out of his own mouth. Jesus is coming back as a Jewish rabbi, says John Hagee, which that makes me stop and reassess John Hagee, because I've always just thought that John Hagee was an opportunist with an extraordinary appetite for money and attention. But now I'm concerned that he's much more than that. It's not just that innocent in that he really just wanted to make a lot of money and stuff his face and enrich his family and live very comfortably, which that alone would be a sin and it would be despicable if that's what John Hagee was. But if you're familiar with the Book of Revelation and Daniel and the rest that I've talked about, even just kind of familiar like me, I'm no John Hagee. I haven't been focused on the end time for 40 years. But just, I've studied a bit in the past, I don't know, five years, really. So I'm somewhat familiar with the way the end times is reported in the Bible that it's going to work out. Which, by the way, that's the way it is going to work out, the way it's in the Bible. So I am familiar. Now, I wouldn't call myself an expert. But I know that Jesus isn't coming back as a Jewish rabbi, because I've read the book there. And it seems to me he's coming back as a conquering warrior king. And he's going to kill, like, almost everybody. He's going to slaughter and kill people so much that his whole garment that he's wearing is going to be saturated in blood. He's going to lead an army of horses that are white. And when the prophet reports on them in the book, the front part of the, they're all red, and then there are speckled, and then there are white. Do you know why that is? It's because the horses that Jesus and his army are riding on are going through so much blood that the first phalanx is literally saturated, and then the prophet sees, and then they're just speckled, and then finally there's some white left there. That's because it's just a bloody massacre. So for John Hagee to say Jesus is going to be, so as I read the end times history, which is an interesting thing about the Bible is the only book that can write about the future as history. And the Bible does that without any apology and without any qualification. The Bible writes about things that have been done in the future, which just think about the grammar there, because it's in Revelation. It has been done in the future. Why? Because when God decides certain things, they're as good as done. And so, having suffered the crucifixion and humiliation on the cross with the spitting and the whipping and the mocking, right? Having suffered that, and risen from the dead and now offered salvation to the world, the fact that Jesus Christ will come back and slaughter every one of his enemies brutally, viciously, and just, I mean, it's going to be ugly, okay? So that decision, it's as good as done. It is history, even though it hasn't happened yet. And then as you read through the details of how that all occurs, and how the end times events unfold, it would appear to even the casual observer that there's a pretty good chance that it's the Antichrist who is going to appear as a Jewish rabbi. If anyone in the story is going to appear as a Jewish rabbi, and I'm not going to say anybody because I'm no expert on this, but if there was anyone who might reveal himself as a Jewish rabbi, it would be the Antichrist, because the Antichrist is going to, just by his name, you should know this, he is going to imitate Jesus Christ. He's going to come as the Messiah, he's going to die, he's going to rise from the dead, that whole thing. So it would appear to me that if anyone's going to come in the end times as a Jewish rabbi, it's going to be the Antichrist. And a guy like John Hagee, I mean, I would think he would know that, having been obsessed with and raising money on the end times for, I said 40 years, maybe 50. I mean, John Hagee's been, he's been shucking and jiving on Daniel and Revelation for an awful long time. He's been leading tours to the Promised Land and raising money to rebuild the temple. And I don't know, he might have a red heifer in his basement that he's getting ready to auction off. John Hagee's been doing this for a long time. And for him to say that, it just makes me wonder if he's not affiliated with the Antichrist. That's all. I mean, I'm not going to say he is. It just makes me wonder that he might be. And if John Hagee, who, by the way, he might be a Christian, he might be a saved Christian who at one point believed Jesus Christ died for his sins, he understood the gospel, and he got saved. But it could be that John Hagee is now, he's like Solomon, you know, he started out great, but he ended up like not just deceived by the Antichrist, but actually affiliated with and doing the work of and the service to the Antichrist. Is it possible John Hagee has fallen to that level? And is it possible that the rest of the Christianity industry has fallen down there with him? All right, now I'm not going to condemn any specific person with specific work for or against the Antichrist, but I will assert that that intro is better than anything the Rolling Stones ever did. Forget Satisfaction, but anyway, that's a secondary topic. I mean, along with who works for the Antichrist, I'm not able to tell you exactly. All I can operate on is the best information I have right now, which, by the way, is the complete and perfect scriptures of the living God in toto revealed to us in an easy-to-read format, which nobody else ever had that before. I mean, not like we have had it. Especially those of us in the English-speaking world who basically have the Bible in a form accessible and easier to have than anyone else ever at any time in history, as far as having access to God's word. We've got it better than anybody. So, based on what I'm able to take from that, it's just possible John Hagee is a minion of the devil and an antichrist. All right. Meanwhile, my friend posted a notification on Facebook this past week about the fact that the debt, the U.S. debt, has surpassed $40 trillion. Which, that's kind of a scary thing, right? He posted up this cute, it's really well done, I must say. I don't know if my friend came up with it or if he borrowed it from someone, but it was a picture of one of the characters from The Simpsons, which has been running on the air for like 30 or 40 years now. And the character of The Simpsons is warning about the $27 trillion debt. This, however many years ago that was. It's 20 minutes ago, I forget. But, and then 27 trillion is crossed out and 40 trillion is written in red. And it's supposed to be alarming, because it is alarming that we have a $40 trillion debt and that we're spending over $1 trillion annually just to service the interest on the debt. I mean, I'm no economist, but that's alarming. Because eventually you can't pay your bills anymore, you run out of money, and everything goes kablooey, right? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've never gone bankrupt myself. I've been blessed. I grew up in America at the peak of probably the prosperity of any civilization in the world, where you could literally just wake up, stay sober 8 hours a day, and you'd fall backwards into a pretty good living. That's the country that God blessed me with, that I grew up in. So I've never experienced the economic catastrophic bankruptcy and all that stuff. I've always had it pretty good. Not even that I was all that good at it or even paying attention that much. It's just that I grew up in such a land of plenty that all you had to be was just not a complete idiot. And you should die a millionaire in America. If you grew up in my generation, unless you're a completely incompetent moron, you should live relatively well and die a millionaire. If you don't, well, that's on you. That's all. So what am I getting at? Oh, the $40 trillion debt. He posts up there, this is scary. I agree with him that America is the incompetent buffoon who, even born in my generation, could blow it all, right? That's who America is. The drunken maniac who's just so irresponsible that you could... You're kidding me. You blew what? How much were you given by your parents and grandparents and great-grandparents? What? And you blew all that and went broke? America, how embarrassing is that, right? So America is approaching that. So he posted that, and I did a little bit of math in my head, and I posted a uplifting and positive response to the terrifying thought of impending disaster and calamity that's hanging above the head of America, way closer than the scimitar of Islamism, is the implosion of financial destruction and payback and just everything, right? So he posted the frightening numbers. I posted, hey, on Facebook, I posted this. There's a solution. $40 trillion is about $100,000 for every American. The earning life of the average American is worth around $2 million. So really, it's about a 5% hit on all of us to wipe out the whole national debt. So if everyone agreed to suffer an equal loss and move forward starting at zero, we could solve the problem of the national debt. But we would all have to agree. And then if we all manage to agree on that, our liberty, creativity, and productivity would work out that hit way faster than we thought, with no suffering, a little bit maybe of what you might consider some financial pain. I don't even know if you can call it pain. A minor hiccup, momentary economic discomfort is all we would have to experience. And then, but we would all have to agree that we've all been wrong and we all deserve a hit. Now that's the hitch, right? Getting everybody to sit down and say, okay, I'll admit I messed up too, and I'm willing to take the hit. But if we could get that agreed to, I mean, just having agreed to that, just getting everyone to agree that we've all done wrong and we all deserve a hit, then all of us would be humbled just a little bit. And that would change the entire everything. Just if everybody experienced that moment of humility for just a moment, that would change everything. And with that agreed upon, some of the millionaires and the billionaires that everybody pretends they hate. I said pretend because they don't hate them. They just envy them and they're covetous of what they have. They don't hate the billionaires. If they could, they would kill the billionaire and write everything in his bank account into their bank account. And then that would make everything good. But they pretend to hate them because they can't get what they got. And so they hate that. But all those billionaires that you pretend to hate, if we all agreed and came to that moment of humility, in a moment you would see all those millionaires and billionaires, they would kick in way more than anybody ever thought to help everybody else out. Because everybody would be humiliated, which at this point in America's history, trust me, a little humiliation is in order. Everybody needs to be taken down a notch and humbled. And if we could somehow agree and move forward, then with no pain, no suffering, just In fact, I bet you with our creativity and our liberty and productivity and the blessings that the hard work of our grandparents and great-grandparents and our parents and even the amount of social good that is just banked by what our forefathers did, we wouldn't even experience pain or a loss. We would experience a relatively modest reduction in the increase of the fortunes that await us and our grandchildren and our children and grandchildren. That's all we would experience. And bigger than that, really, bigger than solving the financial problem, we would all experience a tremendously valuable lesson in humility and forgiveness. And then it would work, and the whole rest of the world would see it work, and the rest of the world would copy our solution, and then we would all avoid a really big war, which is the other way this gets solved, by the way. If you go back in history and you look at the times when all of civilization has teetered on the brink of financial bankruptcy, instead of volunteering for humility, most of the people will just try to kill the other people and take from them and figure it out that way. And that's usually how it goes. But here in America, we should remember the blessings of Christian liberty that we have, and we should be able to convince our fellow man, even the heathens, to go along with this option, for crying out loud. All right. I'll even volunteer to run the place and make sure that we quit with all the ungodly, profligate spending. Me, personally, I don't volunteer. In fact, this message was brought to you by the Spirit of Jesus Christ, the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. He's the only one who could pull that off, would be Jesus Christ himself. Now, fortunately, Jesus has in place representatives, personal representatives who could help all of us to understand how this could be done. And we could avoid the big war that I talked about. All right. And meanwhile, I was reading a story because I know that sounds like too pie in the sky, right? That could never happen. Well, with man, that's impossible to even think that could happen. But with God, the impossible is made possible by the Spirit of God. And so from our lips to God's ears, we hope that someone will hear us and perhaps call the people to repentance, and that they might be able to utilize the Spirit of God that he has put in the world, in his believers, in his body, and that we could pull the rest of the people back from this suicidal, murderous, catastrophic path that everybody is on. And all right, now that brings us to the bond market, because if you've been following economics and reporting in the world of impending financial catastrophe, you know that the bond market's been under a lot of stress and strain lately as investors demand more and more return in order to keep buying into the Treasury Department's promise to repay them with interest. That's getting more and more hard to believe that you could keep this going. And at some point, it's not like a conspiracy or anything. It's that the average investor and investment advisor just stops believing that. And then there's just a loss of confidence. Once enough of the average investor and investment advisor stop believing the Treasury's promise to repay all this with interest, then that's how this whole game continues, by the way. It's a confidence game. You know, con man is based on confidence. Well, the whole economic system is. It's a confidence game. And once the game is up, it's like the whole game is based on our confidence in one another long term. And so once we lose that, if we lose it even for a moment, it's a little scary. But then if that moment isn't resolved and it goes on, then it gets, you don't even want to think about that. And so anyway, somebody asked President Trump this past week about the Treasury Secretary's moves and grooves and buys and purchases and with the interest and the purchasing of the bonds and the quantitative easing, liquidation of non-liquidation or whatever he does there. Bessant, who's the genius that Trump has brought in to manage all this. And Trump answered the question. They said, well, the reporter asked, have you talked to Secretary Bessant? Is it Bessant or Bessant? See, because I don't watch the news anymore, I don't know how to pronounce these people's names where the accent is, it's fluid in the spelling. You don't know. Is it Bessant? I'll go with Bessant. President Trump, have you asked Secretary Bessant about any other types of intervention besides the interventions that he's already doing with the bonds and the purchasing and the quantitative liquidation and easing or whatever that is? All those genius moves that Bessant, the genius who, if I'm not mistaken, helped Soros break the Bank of England. If I'm not mistaken, Bessant was one of those guys. Any other intervention, Mr. President? And here's what Donald Trump answered. We have many types of intervention. That's one, Trump said, adding, quote, the ultimate intervention is our military. And if we have to use that, we will, unquote. So at which point she said, well, wait a minute. I wasn't asking you about Iran. I was asking you about the bond market. Not some. Anyway, so this story, I just read this, and I haven't had a chance to do all the research, but this was reported, I think I got this down from CNN, who's just a shill for the anti-Trump maniacs. And so, of course, they're going to present this, and it's possible that I've been deceived by a selective editing of the audio. I have to look into it. I think it's quite possible that Trump thought, he's like me. He's getting old. He doesn't hear as well as he used to. Maybe he's got to change coffee cups because one of his fingers is giving out. I mean, he's older than I am even. So maybe it is that he misheard the question. He thought they were asking about intervention in Iran. And so he mentions the military. But maybe he was confused. Because surely Donald Trump did not mean to imply that our military could intervene in the bond market. Because nobody would imply that, right? Because, well, that's crazy to even think about military intervention in a financial crisis. But here's the thing, folks. Whether Donald Trump knows it or not, that's a prophetic statement. Because what happens in actual financial meltdowns is that, yes, the military is at some point the most logical option to intervene in the economic crisis. And it could be that for a moment, Donald Trump had just a moment of clarity and saw that that was a potentiality. And so he just admitted it, because Donald Trump tends to say things that are true because he hasn't been conditioned yet to know when to lie about everything. I mean, he's not a regular politician who's schooled in the art of the industrial lie. He's not like Vindman or Obama or Fauci or John Hagee, who's now John Hagee. He's a part of another industry conditioned to know exactly how and when to lie about the biggest issues. And I mean, that's the Christianity industry, which is more dangerous than the political industry. I mean, the political industry, it could get you killed. It could get your body killed. The Christianity industry, be careful. That one, those are the ones Jesus warned about, who can kill both body and soul in hell and get you judged by the one who judges not just the body, but the soul in hell. So be careful with that, okay? And we need a humility. We need a moment of Everybody needs a moment of individual humility, and hopefully that would translate into a national humility that would benefit everyone generally. And that's why we're here at the Weekly Worldview. We're trying to guide all of you into that moment of personal humility that gets you reconciled to God via the blood of Jesus Christ. And then if we can help the rest of the world, that's great too. We're happy to take that as gravy. We'll be back next time. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.